On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're wrapping our heads around some mind-bending physics in Three Body Problem on Netflix, putting the pedal to the metal with last week's guest, Anthony Mackie, in Twisted Metal on Paramount Plus, and trying to blag our way into very exclusive company with Kristen Wiig in Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus. Plus, Wumi Masaku joins us on the podcast this week to talk about Passenger, which lands on ITV next week. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV Podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that has only one thing on its mind today. Indeed, I suspect all of you do, and that is, Boyd, tell us, what were episodes 2 to 4 of Channel 5's Love Rat like? Please don't leave us in suspense. I need to know what happens.
I forgot. I totally forgot.
Yeah, like an elephant, James never forgets. Well, I was going to save this to the What We're Watching section, which is obviously, you know, coming up after the intros. If you want to get into it now,
oh, no,
sure.
This is the highlight of the podcast, Boydie. We need to know.
Wait. Did you actually watch it?
Yeah.
You did such a like good impression of someone who'd completely forgotten just then. You looked crestfallen when you said it.
No. Absolutely watched it. Yeah. And I liked it. Yeah, I carried on liking it. I carried on being gripped by it. It has moments, right? It has moments that are stretched credulity, shall we say, and other moments that are slightly weirdly, I don't know, shot and edited, not weirdly, but just a little bit clunky, that's the word. But basically, I really enjoyed one of the main things about it. It's got a wish fulfillment element to it, in that Sally Lindsay's character, who I remind listeners has been ripped off in a kind of fake, there's a word for it, like fake romance situation, to basically by this guy in Greece who pretends to be falling in love with her,
and a love scam.
She falls for it, takes all her money, etc. Well, the kind of wish fulfillment is that she gets to find out exactly what's going on, which, no spoilers, with that's in the first episode, and the next three episodes are really all about, you know, finding out the detail of this scam and the detail of the guy, people who are carrying it out, and how it works, and it delving deep into, you know, the motive, apart from greed and, you know, being a wrong'un, of the guy who pretends to seduce her. And that's interesting.
Question, I've got a question. Did Neil Morrissey appear in it more? Because I felt like he was shortchanged in that first episode.
No, Neil Morrissey is her estranged husband. And yeah, he comes to help her out when, you know, he flies over to help her out and be there for her while she's going through this horrendous life-ruining stuff. And they have a kind of quite a believable relationship, I thought, kind of well-matched. And, you know, he can be a bit annoying with her, and, you know, he's kind of frustrated with what she wants to do, how she wants to stay in, and, you know, sort this fucking thing out and get to the bottom of the scam. So they have like conflict over that, but he's really good. Neil Morris is always really good. Ramon Tikaram is really good, as it's kind of one of the dodgy characters at the center of it all. So I genuinely enjoyed it. And I've seen it, you know, you two weren't the only ones who like, you know, taking a piss out of it.
Shocking.
But equally, I think there's like a narrative of, you know, oh, a Channel 5 drama starring Sally Lindsay is going to be intrinsically a bit basic.
Wait, excuse me.
No, I'm not saying
I'm
you.
I'm not that person.
I'm not saying
okay,
you.
Fine.
I 100% am that person, and yet it's still true.
I am saying James and some other, shall we say, you know,
arses.
Low level newspapers, shall we say.
Basically James and the Tabs.
Yeah, James, yeah, exactly. James is aligning himself with the Daily Mail. That's what's happening here.
Oh my God, that's harsh.
Yeah.
The poster boy.
Yeah,
oh
yeah,
my God.
Yeah. But genuinely, I enjoyed it and I found it interesting. And the above and beyond everything, it's Sally. She is great, so genuinely great. Mm. She has to, there are elements of the script that could have been worked over, and it's not perfect, and there are certain scenes where she has to do something, and, oh my God, you know, eye roll, kind of like, really, you know. but she pulls them off, she sells it, she is brilliant.
We said, to be fair, at least I did, she is great in it, she's probably the best thing, I think.
Oh, 100%, yeah. But I think, you know, I think it was interesting. And, yeah, I'm not going to say interesting again. I've said it about 5,000 times. but I genuinely watched it all. It was not a trial. I absolutely was glad I watched it to the end. And, yeah, I think it's good. Love that. Channel 5, check it out.
So, Boydie, obviously this whole thing has been very perplexing for me. So, I, you know, Not that I don't take your word for these things, not that I don't respect you as a venerable film critic, you are, of course, TV's Boyd Hilton, but I thought it important to refer this to a higher authority to get, you know, a real proper expert opinion on this. To that end, and frankly, this was unsolicited, I got a text yesterday from my mum.
Oh, wow.
And it reads thusly, I am thoroughly enjoying Love Rat, and so are my friends. We are all over 70. What does that say?
That's brilliant.
So there you go. My mum weighs in. Love Rat is a hit.
I mean, it's an interesting point because what I would say is that sometimes you do have to think not everything is for, you know, hipster 20, 30 something people like you.
Oh, yes, that's me. I am definitely a hipster 20 something.
Yeah. No, I mean, in general. And it's a good point. And I think this, I haven't checked the viewing figures. I'm sure it'll do really well because Sally Lindsay's a big draw as well. But yeah, and Channel 5, in general, there's a whole Channel 5, like, they know what they're doing. That channel knows its audience better than any other mainstream channel in British television, honestly. From this kind of show to the thrillers to its incredible fast turnaround documentary. They've got a documentary on Saturday night about that terrible Wonkaville, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The Wonka Live Experience.
Fast turnaround documentary on that this Saturday night. And you know, it's like that kind of thing. They're brilliant at responding to what people are genuinely. They've had 4 documentaries about air fryers so far, and there's another one coming up.
Jesus Christ.
Do you have an air fryer?
No, I don't. My mum does, though. My mum does.
Oh, really? James, do you?
My mum does not have an air fryer. But no, I do not also own an air fryer. Though it's one of these things where I want one, I just don't know what I'd do with it. Like, what do I use it for? I have an oven, but I want one. I don't understand why I want one. I just want one.
Well, they're very quick. You don't have to, like, you don't have to preheat them. You don't have to, like,
fan oven, it's fine.
Yeah, fan ovens take some time. Yeah, but they're quicker than fan ovens, though, as well. And there's certain things they do really well, like crispy roast potato. I don't know. I'm saying.
someone's watched the 4 documentaries.
I did read that Jamie Oliver is starting an air fryer TV show. It's dedicated to air fryer cooking.
Well, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Early TV news, but yeah, that's true as well. Yeah,
that's the thing that's happening.
That's the thing that's happening. Anyway, Channel 5, don't get me started. But yeah, they really know what they're doing when it comes to their audience. And I love the fact that your mum and her friends all enjoyed Love Rats. Yeah.
Very big with the 70s and 80s contingent.
I'm a 70-something old woman at heart, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Boys eat one of the girls.
Woman of a certain age.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, great. Well, that's the Love Rat update for you. That's the main part of the podcast. You might as well all go now. But if you want to hang around, we might as well talk about some other things. What have you guys been watching this week? Let's start with you, Kay.
So I've only watched one thing this week. And it's because I reviewed it, but I would have watched it anyway. And that is Mandy. So I think, did we review the last series on here? I can't remember. It's the Diane Morgan comedy. And she's this ludicrous comedy character, but I kind of enjoy her. She reminds me of, if anyone has ever watched EastEnders, she's very Shirley Carter-esque in terms of her big hair and her thigh-high boots and stuff like this. Anyway, in episode 1, she wants to be an air stewardess, but she isn't tall enough, so she gets a leg lengthening operation. You just have to go with it, let it roll over you, because it's surreal and funny and just very in keeping with the character. Diane Morgan is obviously great, but also your mate James Paul Reddy from Motherland,
yes,
the co-star, has a cameo, and it's really good. So yeah, and you, another thing that you'll love about this is the first episode was, I think, 15 minutes long. So,
I must admit, I do approve of that runtime. Paul Reddy instantly is in one of the shows we'll be reviewing on next week's episode. So.
Ooh.
Stay tuned for that one. Okay, interesting. So this, I must admit, this is, when you said Mandy, I kept thinking about, like, you know, the Cheddar Goblin from the Nick Cage film of the same name. But I've never seen this. I do like Diane Morgan a lot. I do feel this might not be for me.
You would deploy the S word and we'd have to fall out
okay,
again.
Fair
so
enough.
Let's not. Yeah.
But I think we did review it, though,
great,
didn't we?
I have no recollection of it.
No, I think we did. Well, when I've been here, we've done Philomena Kunk.
Yes, we've definitely Kunk on Earth.
Oh yeah, we did Kunk. Yes,
yeah,
we did Kunk.
And we've done Motherland.
It's when James was painting his ceiling and
that's
everyone was outraged.
That's it. And everyone was furious with me. That's the one. Boydie, before we go back to you after your brief Love Rat interlude, I'm assuming there have been other things this week, but I've watched quite a bit this week, quite a few different things. So I've begun to tap back into One Day. So I watched another episode of that, which I think was the fifth episode, which, yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a downer. Like, it was not.
Which one's this?
It's largely him being depressed and becoming
modest.
Is it
when he's on the train station?
Yes, that's the one.
It's such a good scene.
It's a good episode, but it's not Happy Happy Joy Joy, as I watched it at like 11 o'clock last night. So that was fun. I've watched a few more episodes of Extraordinary Season 2, which again, I'm also enjoying. It's giving me the lols. I saw the final two episodes of Shogun. Hooray! Obviously, I'm not going to spoil that for anyone, so that's I'm just going to leave that there. Subtitles or no. And finally, I got back into Halo. So I've been cracking on with Halo Season 2. Have to say, massively enjoying it. Really, really liking it. It's darker, it's knottier, it's more complex than Season 1. It really feels like it's funny because obviously it's based on the games. You'd think it would be quite light. Obviously, we're going to be tackling that genre a little bit later on in this show. But actually, I love what they've done with the mythology, deepening it, broadening it, bringing in all sorts of different characters, making it very much about John the Man as opposed to Master Chief the Spartan. And it scratches my sci-fi itch. So if you haven't been watching Halo, give it a go because it's a lot of fun. Hail to the Chief, baby.
I haven't watched that much, actually. I haven't had time other than Love Rat, to be honest.
But to be fair, that was quite an undertaking. You had four episodes to watch, didn't you?
That was a huge undertaking. Yeah. Yeah, massive. I mean, I have watched Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes again. Like, as they're going out, I'm watching them again, like, for the third time. So we're up to last week, the Gettysburg Address, which was the episode where Larry tries to learn Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address whilst peeing.
For what reason?
Just because he thinks that it's time. So he thinks basically going to the bathroom and peeing is a wasting your time. So while he's doing that, he wants to do something constructive. So he puts the Gettysburg Address up on his bathroom wall and learns it while peeing, basically, to give him a constructive thing to do, rather than wasting time. And then there's a brilliant storyline of Susie having a big billboard for her kaftan business. Someone spray paints penis and balls on it, basically. And that gets...
Is it Larry?
It's not Larry. No, it's not Larry. But that gets brilliantly out of hand. And Larry goes on a date with Sienna Miller. Sienna Miller's involvement in this is brilliant. She plays she plays herself, but with some amazing, like, obsession with fresh fruit thrown in. That's what I'll say. There's a scene where Larry rescues a shot with a pear, with the arrival of a pear. And so, yeah. I'm just in loving Larry. So as this goes on Monday, the seventh episode of the series will air, The Dream Scheme, which is brilliant as well. A lot of golf club antics in that episode. And then there's only three more to go. Three more episodes of Curb to go, listeners. And no one's
Sad
seen
times.
The finale. The finale has completely been under wraps. So everyone, I'm going to be absolutely fascinated on April the 7th. With what the fuck is going to happen into the finale. We know the title of it, which is No Lessons Learned, which is very much the kind of moral or the very much the theme of Seinfeld back in the day. And of course, Curb, No Lessons Learned, No Hugging, Show About Nothing, all of that, etc.
Okay. Thank you, Boydie. Shall we move on to this week's listener question? Kay, you apparently shared this with us earlier. I have no recollection of it. So let's just jump in and pretend you did, but in reality, no. Assume you didn't. what is this week's pre-shared question?
Right. Okay. First of all, you rat, I did, and I sent a bunch over for Pilot Plus, and this was amongst them, and it's from Beth Cave, who says, "Dear Kay, the baking champion, TV's Boyd Hilton and James the Nerd Emperor. I don't recognise Chris's demotion. Love listening to the pod on the way to my hospital placement. A question. What are the TV shows within TV shows you think should and shouldn't be adapted? Had a throwback to the Nickelodeon show Sunny with a Chance that adapted the show they were acting in within the show called So Random following Demi Lovato's exit."
Oh, yeah, that requires some thought, yeah. No, I've got an answer. I think I've got one answer. So the one that and following on from what I've just been talking about, of course, in Curb, the last season was revolved around him trying to make young Larry, which was the show about him as a kid, him growing up. And that is definitely a show that I need to see. So I'd love it if suddenly, you know, Larry, imagine if he announced at the end of this series, right, I'm going to now actually make young Larry stories from my childhood. That would be fantastic. Or when he was like a teen. In fact, young Larry's like a teenager late teens, early 20s. That's when it is set in the show. So that whole idea of a show series about Larry David's youth would be fantastic. And the one not to see that struck me is, do you remember Extras? Ricky Gervais and Steve Rogers Extras revolved around him, the character being in a terrible sitcom called When the Wind Blows, the main character. Yeah, it was like a kind of spoof of terrible basic studio set sitcoms with canned laughter and catchphrases. And I'm trying to remember what his catchphrase was.
Like Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. Now it's really annoying me that I can't remember what his catchphrase was. I'm going to have to look it up. Sorry.
Oh, you Google it. Right, my answer. Yeah. I was trying to think of an answer. And I think actually if I was like, I don't know, a teenager, I would quite like to
Are you having a laugh? Are you having a laugh?
I thought you were just going for K there.
Are you having a laugh was the catchphrase in When the Whistle Blows in Extras. Yeah. And he used to say it, are you having a laugh? Like that in a kind of like normal, that would be, yeah, carry on. Like, sorry.
Right. Okay. Are you sure you're done now?
Yep.
Right. Yeah. So if it was back in the day, if as a teenager, I would have liked to see an adaptation of The Valley from The O.C.
Yes, I remember that.
So it's a show they were all obsessed with.
Yeah, Summer in particular, right. Absolutely obsessed with it. Yeah. Mm.
So I think that would have been cool.
Who was in The Valley? That's the question.
Mm, good question. No, I can't remember.
See, the problem here, Kay, is you've not done due diligence and just gone and not taken us deeper and given us a full breakdown, synopsis, cast, everything.
I know.
Yeah. This is what we need.
Do you know what? Even though I've been so remiss, yet I did actually think of an answer and prepare in advance, unlike some of us.
Ooh. I mean, that is fair.
So what's your answer that you've hastily Googled?
Something that actually did jump into my mind is, so we were thinking about what shows we were going to tackle in From the Vault on Pilot Plus, and we've been soliciting some suggestions from listeners. And one of the ones that came up was Oz, which was one of the first HBO peak TV shows. And there was a show in Oz called Miss Sally's Schoolyard, which is like a little comedy series meant for children. But they watch it in Oz, in Oswald State Correctional Facility, mainly because it's presented by a nurse wearing a tight uniform. That's clearly why the inmates like it. But that's a thing in there. But I suppose while we're on the subject of tight uniforms, do you remember 30 Rock's idea for a show, MILF Island? Which 100% sounds like the type of show you guys would watch.
Yes. Oh, there were so many in 30 Rock. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Monkey Tennis.
Monkey Tennis, yes.
Yeah. Hosteling with Chris Eubank.
Where Helen O'Hara here, she would obviously give a vote for Ghost Faces, which is the supernatural show within Supernatural. Which all gets a little bit navel-gazy. But one thing I wanted to mention, which is a slightly weird one, which was, do you remember the soap opera in Twin Peaks?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Which I believe, and I say I believe, I've actually had to look up what it was called because I couldn't remember. It was called Invitation to Love. And it was this really weird, surreal soap opera that kind of played. You can see it playing on loads of the TV sets during the show. And I guess it was like, it was supposed to offer some kind of satirical commentary on everything that was happening while obviously lightening the tone slightly. But it always struck me as just deeply, deeply strange.
It was like their version of As the World Turns, one of those proper American daytime soaps.
Days of Our Lives. Oh, and while we're on it, we should say The Days of Our Lives that exists within the Friends universe is the only version of Days of Our Lives I would ever be prepared to watch.
Of course.
I need Dr. Drake Remore with his brain transplanted into Susan, or rather, is Susan Sarandon's brain transplanted into the body of Drake Remore, who'd been in a coma for years, having fallen down a lift shaft. I mean, this stuff is gold. Love it. Well, I think we've successfully answered that question. I hope it was enlightening. If you would like to have
your
question.
Thank you to Beth.
Yes, thank you, Beth. Yeah. If you would like to have your question addressed on this particular podcast, do send them in. We are at Pilot TV Pod on Instagram. We are at Pilot TV Pod on Twitter. And Kay is at Kay Ribeiro, but only on Twitter because hackers control her Instagram account. And if you send them the questions, I mean, frankly, they might have good answers. You can give it a go. Send them in, see what they come up with, and then share it with us. That'd be handy. Time now for this week's guest, and Wumi Masaku joins us on the podcast this week, here to promote Passenger, which arrives on ITV1 and ITVX, though not until next week. And this one is actually a series created by Andrew Buchan. This stars Wumi as former Met Police Detective Ria Ajunwa, who moved to the fictional northern town of Chadder Vale. There she's investigating a missing person, but what starts as a relatively simple investigation soon becomes a lot more complicated as she starts to understand that not everything in Chadder Vale is quite as it seems, and lots of inexplicable things start happening. Anyway, I spoke to her just before Christmas about this, but this one, as I say, lands on ITV next week. So this is me talking to Wumi Masaku. But when we welcome to the Pilot TV podcast to talk about Passenger. Before we get into all things Passenger, though, I did want to say before we begin that the Loki season 2 finale is extraordinary. Really, really great. Were you surprised with where that show ended up?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was, reading it was kind of like mind-boggling. First of all, I got very confused, and shooting it was even more confusing. And then I was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is great. Who knew?
Who knew, indeed. Yeah, it's they really did stick the landing, which is a difficult thing to do with a show like that, but lovely stuff. But look, obviously very different from Passenger. And kind of what I was going to ask with this is, like, it's a kind of northern, obviously as a northern police drama, I was going to say this is a much more grounded series than, you know, things like Loki. And that was, of course, before I watched it. But it is far more than it seems on the surface. And it also has a very subtle kind of dark thread of humour all the way through it, which I very much enjoyed. And I was kind of curious, like, how much of that came through in the script?
Oh, yeah, the script. I mean, if it wasn't for Andy Buchan's incredible, like, zingy dialogue and writing style and the world he's built, like, I mean, you just, everyone wants to be a part of, everyone wanted to be a part of it because it was just so different and unique and grounded and also elevated. Like, it has this, like, super, like, you feel like you know everyone and you know these people from your hometown, and you can see how you fit into it, into this world. And then it's kind of elevated to this unnatural level. This not supernatural, but it's unnatural. And it has this unease that makes you just want to keep reading. Like, I'm dyslexic and reading is not my favorite thing to do, even though I have to do it every single day for work. But this was so easy to read and so exciting. And I just wanted to know what happened next. I was just like, I just need to know.
Yeah.
Like, keep going.
Did you know Andrew before doing this? Because obviously he's more famous in front of the camera than, you know, at the keyboard.
Yeah. He and I went to drama school together. He was my third year when I was first year.
Did you?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really funny because we have a really, the RADA community is quite a small community. Like, even with Loki, it's me, Tom and Gugu all were at RADA, not at this exact same time, but, you know, one of us was always there. One of us was together. And then we've got, you know, Lee and Nicole, our directors. They were also RADA grads as well. I knew Andy before, and he and I hadn't seen each other in a very long time. And I think it was 2016. He and I met at Sister Picture, our production company. And he was like, I've been writing something. And now I think I might have been writing this for you without realizing it. Can I send it to you? And so I read it in the early days. Like, this is really, like, Andy, you have such a talent. Like, he is a very, very brilliant writer. And so then reading the following drafts, I was like, okay, this is great. I'm so in.
It's a good job you liked it, or that could have been awkward.
Just happens sometimes.
Just to be clear, like, so Andy wasn't the guy you punched in the face at RADA, right? Because I remember reading a story that you'd accidentally punched a sparring partner in the face while rehearsing.
No, that was my BFF still, Alex Lanny Peckin. He has forgiven me since, but he won't do a fight scene with me ever again. I learned my lesson, though, because I've never made that mistake again, have I?
Well, I noticed that even though there is an allusion to boxing in the first episode of this, you don't actually see you box. So conceivably, your co-stars were just too afraid to get in the ring with you. So
I think so. I think that was... They were like, you know, I've heard about this one. No, thank you.
I mean, you talk about the script. I mean, what I really liked about this was it's very judicious in the information that it kind of gives you, both in what has happened to the various characters and their backstories, but also kind of on what's going on in the kind of, shall we say, less mundane aspects of the story. Like, it really teases it out. And I was wondering, like, you know, is that something that appeals to you, that kind of mystery box storytelling? Was that part of the appeal of this story?
Yeah, definitely. I felt intelligent because it didn't give you everything. And, you know, even all the way through till episode 6, it's still given to you in such a, like, you have to be patient. You just have to be patient. You have to, I think, you know, and such is life, like nothing is just kind of given like straightforward. And I like that about Andy's style. And I feel like even though it's kind of teased out, it's still also very economical. Like you don't, every single character, whether it's a person or even an object or a place, everything has its use and has a story within the story. So it's, I really can't actually stress that enough, because every single thing that is mentioned has a greater story and has a use in Passenger. That like it, nothing ever really feels completely resolved, because until it's resolved, because we need to know why that person was in that scene or why that thing was said or why that thing is being looked for, or, you know, that I don't know, everything has a meaning.
Well, I feel like with the show, like it feels like you've walked in the middle of a conversation, right? Like it feels like all of these characters have the sense that they had a life before we as the viewer joined them. And I think with a lot of shows, and I'm not necessarily singling out American shows in particular, but there's a sense that they try and crowbar all the exposition for the characters into the scenes where you meet them. And I like the fact that with this, it doesn't do that. It's like, we'll give you what you need to know and we'll just allude to all this other stuff that's going on. And if you pick it up, that's fine. And if not, then, you know, you do you.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah. It's clever. It's clever writing.
It is clever. And like Rhea's a really interesting character as well. Obviously, she's moved to this kind of small northern village, what is it, 5 years ago, you know, and she's found herself kind of half cop, half carer, kind of in a way. And mm-hmm. she seems to have this kind of like a hunger for something, like something to engage her, kind of bring her back to life, because she's got into this kind of rut. Like, do you think that's kind of a fair depiction of how she is when we meet her?
Yeah, I always think of Rhea from the moment I read her. I was like, oh, she reminds me of Marsha in Three Sisters. And you know, she says, I'm in mourning for my life.
Mm.
And then, but she doesn't have the bravery to kind of go for Moscow, you know, like leave. She's happy being a big fish in a small pond. I think it kind of gives her a sense of like importance and usefulness, and where she feels like she's actually underachieving and isn't living her best life. And so this feeling of being a little bit important and needed in Sue's life and in the police station and with the individual relationship she has with other characters in the show, like Jim, it gives her a sense of like purpose, even though she knows she's not actually living her purpose. And then she's trying to make purpose. She can't sit still. She's got this like vibration in her where she's like forcing herself to sit still, even though she knows she should move and do something and that there's something bigger. So it kind of translates, that vibration kind of translates into other parts of her life in Chadder. It's just kind of too small, you know, for her.
And she obviously has a lot of baggage with her. Like, we see hints even early on that there's trauma in her past that she's still kind of processing. And I was curious, like, did you and Andy discuss, you know, that kind of stuff, like who she is, what makes her tick? You know, do you like to get that kind of guidance from writers, or do you prefer to bring a lot of that stuff to the table yourself?
We had 2 weeks of rehearsals before we started filming. So we have these conversations where we were just kind of filling in the backstory, colouring her in detail, and a lot of that stuff doesn't get mentioned. It's not referred to. Like, it was just kind of created to make sure that Rhea was full 360 We did that with all of our characters, to be honest. I'm so grateful for that rehearsal because that is really rare. Yeah, so Andy was there and like just trying to figure out her why. Like, why is she still here? Why, what is she afraid of? Why is she afraid to leave? And why is she staying, looking after her ex-husband's mom? Like, when she's clearly not the happiest being there. And then when you find out a person's why, everything else kind of like falls into place quite gently. Yeah. And so, yeah, Andy and I spent time kind of just talking it through. Yeah, his ideas, my ideas. And then with them, whether it was with David or Arian or Barry, we'd figure out, like, we just talk through our backstory and why we, yeah, because it feels like you enter mid-conversation. Like, you do, every show you do, you kind of enter mid someone's life. And they had a whole life before the camera started rolling.
But I suppose the difference is, and I think it's exactly what you talk about with rehearsal, is that it's the iceberg below the surface of the water, isn't it? That if you don't have that, I sometimes think you join people mid-story, but it's hard to imagine their life before you join them. Whereas here, you really do feel like you've just walked into a room and stuff's been going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the little moments, like the little moments, like, and especially the little British grace notes. Like, I love the fact that, you know, Rhea walks into a crime scene, she's outside, it's cold, and she just takes a bite of a custard cream. And that's just the most English thing I've ever seen. But crucially, did you get to choose the type of biscuit, and did she just feel like a custard cream kind of girl?
Well, that was a big old conversation because it was written as a custard cream, but I thought I would have a choice on the day. But props just had 1,000 custard creams. Thankfully, I do like custard creams, but I would have preferred a bourbon.
You know, obviously bourbon, that's a controversial choice. I'd have been like, did she feel like more like a fruit shortcake? Like having like a hobnob possibly? I don't know.
Oh, a chocolate hobnob. Yeah, but I just don't think a chocolate hobnob is as, they don't come in this little traveling packages.
That is,
you know,
true.
What I mean, you get them.
Yeah, so that is true.
That wasn't going to work. You need something that's just in her pocket all the time.
Yeah, like the ones you need from hotel rooms. I know exactly the ones.
Exactly.
You need.
Exactly.
100%. As well as custard creams, there is a point in this where Rhea has a birthday, and it is mentioned, though we do not see it, that she apparently murdered a Justin Bieber song in a good way. Now, is there any chance that is on the cutting room floor, or were you just spared that whole indignity completely?
Thankfully, spared it. Yeah, because I don't know any of
you're not
songs.
A believer.
I'm not a believer. No, I'm not.
Are you a karaoke person? Do you indulge?
It's so funny. I love singing. And this is where I think the difference between like a singer and an actor is, because like as soon as like I get up there to sing, I get really nervous. And like I can sing in a booth like and record like for a show. But when it comes to singing in public, I get really nervous and my voice comes out like a whisper. Like, it's so funny.
Oh, okay. So no, there's going to be no rap karaoke for any of your projects in the future. Ooh. Fair enough. I can understand that. One thing I did want to say is like Rhea drives what can only be described as a classic, in inverted commas, sort of 90s era Volvo, which A, is a great choice of car, but B, very reminiscent of Luther's ride, which felt like a kind of a nice parallel there. I did love your arc in Luther Series 5. Like, Halliday's death still sits me as one of the most shocking moments, which comes absolutely out of nowhere. What was that whole experience
like?
Me too.
Like being on Luther?
Yeah.
It was great. But when I read that in the script, I was like, whoa, that was cold.
Harsh.
Like, come on. Like, and there's no slow death and went with a bullet to the head. Like, no.
No, just bang.
Bang, out, done. And that was great. Again, a really fun shoot. You know, I love working in the UK because I just feel like everyone is so hands-on. Like, you know, everyone's like, let's, you know, I don't know, there's always a camaraderie. And even with your lead being the Idris Elba, there is such warmth and humility and, you know, down to earthness that we have when we work in the UK, I find that, yeah, like everyone's like, what's Idris like? I'm like, grand, he's great. He's dead nice. Like my producer and my co, like my, the star, you would never know. Like just dead easy, comes, welcomes you to the set, you know, knocks on your door before you come in so you get rid of your nerves because you're like, and he's just like, it was just lovely. Yeah, the whole team, Jamie, our director, I had a great time. I loved that job.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously Idris is another graduate of the David Simon School. David Simon, of course, yeah, who has an eye for putting great Brits in very American roles.
Yeah, he does love that, doesn't he?
He does. He does very much. But, I mean, but as you were saying, like, it's do you feel completely at home doing those kind of roles, or is there something always just quite nice about going back to a very British project that, you know, they may not have the catering, but they have the custard creams?
They definitely don't have the catering. That's the one thing I would switch, and maybe the weather. yeah, I love working back in the UK. I really do. I think I always will find working in America slightly intimidating. The accent work is intimidating because you just don't want to be that person who gets go, that's a terrible accent. You just don't want that. So the nerves never leave me. On a 5-month job, the nerves will never leave me. Whereas in like on Passenger, I felt like, but I mean, I was still nervous a lot because it was my first time leading a TV show. But I mean, and those nerves, I mean, okay, did they go? Did they completely go? No, they didn't completely go. But there was an ease because there was just such a familiarity, like with our familiarity with the cast, with the crew, just really easy just to fit back in. Like, and there's not the big like status differences, like,
yeah,
you know, massive Winnebagos and tiny little tin cans, which you get in America, where everyone's kind of on the same level. Like, it doesn't matter if you're the lead or you come in as a day player, you're on this, we're all on the same level and we're treated the same, which I really like and appreciate, because those American sets can feel really intimidating when you come in for a few days, or like you just feel like you, like I feel like I'm gonna get it wrong because my nerves are just so high, because it just feels very pressurized sometimes, you know. And it all just feels so big over here, you know, in America. I live in there.
No, I know exactly what you mean. But like, to be fair, like your We Own This City accent was flawless to my English ears.
Right, to your English ears.
I mean, who knows what someone else would have felt, but I thought it sounded great. And we always have the fact that I think English people find American accents a lot easier than Americans find English accents, because so few of them can pull it off. So,
well, it's interesting. My husband always says, it's and not in a great way, but America has won in the kind of dominance of like globally. Like when you hear people in Asia or Africa speaking English, sometimes they have an American twang. Like it's so the dominant culture, even, you know, considering British TV is, you know, renowned and loved, well loved globally. We still hear American accents every single day on our British TV. So, and they don't have that over here. Like, it's just not the same. Like, unless you search out like a British streamer, like you're not gonna hear a British accent.
That's true. You know? That's very true. I guess they're not as immersed in it, but they do love it. So, you know.
They do love it.
Well, thank you so much. It has been lovely to speak to you.
You too.
That was me talking to Wumi Masaku. Shall we move on to news? What's been happening in the world of news, Boydie?
Well, I think we all went to the event last night. I was recording this Friday morning. The Netflix Next on Netflix event.
Truth.
Which was a lavish array of unveilings of Netflix projects coming up. Trailers, clips from projects that we already know about, announcements of new projects. But the
talent
popped up. Benedict Cumberbatch was there, which was the most exciting guest appearance for me, talking about his new series, which is written by Abby Morgan, and Abby Morgan was there as well. And I thought that looked really interesting, I have to say, like, of all of the things that's coming fairly soon.
It's called Eric.
Thank you. We should say. It's called Eric. Yeah. Yes. And Eric is the name of not Benedict Cumberbatch's character, nor his son who disappears. And the story is, revolves to some extent around Benedict Cumberbatch's son disappearing and wanting to find him, etc. But the giant puppet that is key to the whole show and essentially follows Benedict Cumberbatch's character around. Benedict Cumberbatch is like is kind of like a children's TV presenter slash puppeteer in New York in the 80s. So it's set in New York in the 80s. He's playing like a TV star. It's got a thriller element about his kid disappearing and him wanting to find him. There's a fantastical element with this overgrown purple puppet thing following him around everywhere. It is looks absolutely right up my alley, I have to say. And Abby Morgan was talking about how it touches upon lots of different ideas and themes. The AIDS pandemic is mentioned in there. Racism, because the main cop in it is a black cop in New York in the 80s. So the whole thing, anyway, looked fantastic to me. I'm very excited about it. And the second most exciting thing, I think, for me was the clip of Black Doves, which, of course, is created and written by friend of the pod, Joe Barton, of Giri Haji, The Lazarus Project Shame. And this is the spy thriller starring the absolutely unbeatable cast of Ben Whishaw, Sarah Lancashire, and Keira Knightley. And what particularly I was interested in was seeing Ben Whishaw's character, who's this like seemingly like this professionalist killer. And of course, Ben Whishaw in real life is the most gentle, almost like slight figure. I happen to have met him many times and hosted the old thing with him back in the day. And he's such a lovely, sweet guy. And the idea of him playing this some kind of assassin is brilliant. Genius casting. It's so different from what he's usually known for. So that looked great. I'm really, really excited about that, I have to say. And there was other stuff as well.
Yes. For example, it's good actually, Bordo, you picked different things than I was going to talk about.
Good. Yeah.
I was excited about Joy, which is by Jack Thorne and his wife, Rachel Mason. They've worked on it together, which is a new film and tells the true story behind the birth of Louise Joy Brown in 1978. And she was the first test tube baby and the tireless 10-year journey to make it possible. So this is told through the perspective of Jean Purdy, who was a nurse and embryologist who joined forces with scientist Robert Edwards and surgeon Patrick Steptoe to unlock the puzzle of infertility by pioneering IVF. And excitingly, the cast is James Norton, Bill Nighy, and Thomasine McKenzie. And yeah, they're very passionate about this project because they've gone through IVF themselves and they talked about that and the importance of Jean Purdy being recognised, because the other two were very much known for it, but she was sort of overlooked somewhat. So they felt it was really important to tell her story. So I'm looking forward to that. We saw a clip of Scoop as well, which was very exciting, which is the film sort of documenting Prince Andrew's infamous BBC Newsnight appearance and charts the hard work and effort of producer Sam McAllister, played by Billy Piper, who was there last night, talking about, you know, the negotiations she had to do with Buckingham Palace, Sam did, and also Emily Maitlis's, played by Gillian Anderson's, her jaw-dropping interview. So Gillian Anderson wasn't there, but we did get to hear from Billy Piper and Rufus Sewell, who plays Prince Andrew and also looks quite extraordinary. He's had an amazing physical transformation, and he was very, very eloquent about the fact that, you know, he was interested in taking the role, but obviously was nervous too. And once he had taken it, he was like, not having second thoughts on it, but was like, was starting to feel quite nervous, but embraced it. Now I'm going to stop talking about films because James's eye is twitching.
It's fine.
But we all know the project that James is most excited about coming up on Netflix. Don't
go on, tell me, Boydie, what is it?
Love is Blind UK, hosted by Emma Willis.
So Emma Willis and who was the other chap?
And husband, what's his name?
Her husband, what's his name? That's exactly how I felt.
Matthew.
Two who presented this entire thing, I was like, I do not know who these people are at all. No. I've never heard of
but
them.
But let me set the context, right? So we all sat together in a little seat. I was the filling in the sandwich, and I was just sitting there, and James took great pleasure in tapping me on the shoulder and go, obviously, I don't know who these people are.
I said it quite like that.
I bet you did.
There's a certain pomposity and glee. And I was like,
I didn't know who they were. No, it's not at all.
They did a great job.
They were good. They were very natural and very, very organic with it all. But it was just, I didn't know who they were. Although, yes, Love is Blind. So this is, people sit in separate rooms and they just hear each other's voice. So it's basically like two people in the Big Brother diary room talking to each other and deciding if they want to go on a date.
Yeah, kind of.
Pretty much.
Good description. Yeah, you are looking forward.
There we go.
And the last thing I wanted to mention is Missing You by Harlan Coben. There's going to be an adaptation of that, which is very exciting. And they announced the cast list, which includes Rosalind Elisa, Jessica Plummer, Richard Armitage, Lenny Henry, Steve Pemberton, Paul Kay, Samantha Spiro, Lisa Faulkner, and Mary Malone.
I have to say, one of the things that that entertained me a lot about this, and look, fair play to Netflix, like they're very big on accessibility. So obviously they had the subtitles on and all of the clips and the trailers, but they had a big screen down the front, which was doing AI generated real time transcription of everything that was being said. Now, if anyone has ever dabbled with AI transcription, they'll know that the AIs are absolutely deranged when it comes to working out what people say. And I was chuckling away to myself at some of the stuff that was coming up on this screen. What in the name of Harlan Coben's name? I really can't even begin to tell you. But it was quite entertaining. I was like, this is gibberish. I pity anyone who was relying on that.
I love that's your main takeaway. Yeah, that was it. AI generated. Yeah, that's what
But to be clear, I'm good on Netflix for having it. I had a big screen facing the audience, and honestly, I have never seen that before at an event.
To have a public facing screen.
Because initially, I thought, oh, this is weird. The teleprompter's facing the public. That's really awkward. Mm. And then it became very clear. No, that isn't the teleprompter. They were just essentially doing captions for the hearing impaired, which I just thought, I thought it was a lovely thing. It was unusual. As you said, I was quite excited that Rufus Sewell was there. I do love Rufus Sewell.
He's brilliant.
Prosthetics to make him look like Andrew were quite extraordinary. Unfortunately, he still sounds like Rufus Sewell because he wasn't doing like a mimic. He wasn't trying to mimic the voice in that very precise way. And Rufus Sewell has quite a distinctive way of speaking.
So I found that about. Do you know what? I actually thought that about Gillian Anderson. I thought she looked like Emily Maitlis, but it was just
Gillian Anderson talking. Yeah, I think they made a decision to try and mimic the voices.
Well, except I've seen Scoop. And I thought this watching because they showed the kind of extended trailer, didn't they? And you would have thought that Gillian Anderson doesn't do the voice particularly, but when you actually watch the whole thing, it feels like she does much more. So yeah, it's difficult to explain. Yeah, but I think there was something about the way they chose those clips. I don't know, but watch the whole thing, and she does absolutely kind of change her voice a bit, certainly in terms of intonation and the way. Emily, very unique way Emily Maitlis does speak, and she totally captures that. So, and to a lesser extent, him with Prince Andrew. I think he does change his voice a little bit, is all I'd say. Yeah, more than you might think from that trailer, is all I'd say. Like, you completely forget. I completely forgot that they are Gillian Anderson and Rufus Sewell. I totally was immersed in the fact that they are, you know, the real people they're playing.
Listen, I can't wait for it. Can we just quickly agree that we will preview it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Thanks.
Furthermore, we can agree that we'll review it, and we'll get Gillian Anderson for the pod because
Oh my god!
We will
amazing.
See what else is out this week. If we can fit a film into this TV podcast, then we might be able to do it.
Even though James has been dilly dallying because he's on some fucking tour and hasn't been answering his emails, it should be fine.
I must admit that is a low point, isn't it? When someone's saying, "Do you want to speak to Gillian Anderson?" and I just don't see it because I'm in Sheffield.
Oh my god!
If you had the experience I had staying in the Travelodge in Sheffield City Centre, let me tell you, it was kind of spectacular and not in a good way.
Put it this way.
We literally left it to go to the Premier Inn for breakfast. That should give you exactly.
Oh my god, yeah, that's brilliant.
That's exactly that's where brilliant. We were like, no, we can't deal with this. We're going to the Premier Inn for breakfast.
That's a good ad for Premier Inn.
It really is. It was like Premier Inn, nowhere near as bad as Travelodge. And
did you bring your own plate out of your bag?
I should have done. Gigantic. To be fair, I cannot comment on all Travelodges. I don't know that I've ever stayed in another one, but this particular one in Sheffield City Centre has a bar in reception that is open till 4 a.m. them. Now, it is,
oh yes,
so but I can. I'm gonna let your imagination do the one. I want you to imagine what that reception was like when me, Chris, and Helen walked in at around midnight after the show. Let me just put it to you this way: we ended that evening. I ended that evening sitting in my room in the Travelodge, Sheffield City Centre, alone eating a McDonald's. That's how that night ended.
Oh dear.
With your special drawer. What I would say about Travelodge is I've thought this for quite a long time because I've stayed in Travelodge like in Edinburgh for TV festival.
You're an expert. And then, like,
I'm a bit of an expert. They do vary a lot. They vary a lot. Like they range from like really quite nice to like a dread. That's clearly your one. Yeah.
Which one's the Lenny Henry one? Is it Premier Inn?
I think so. Yeah, I think Lenny's Premier. Which is probably. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, should probably check.
Okay. Two mentions of Lenny in one point.
Yeah,
we're just shilling for Lenny Henry. But yeah, so I'm very, very tired, a little bit, you know, like PTSD'd from having stayed at the Sheffield Travelodge.
How many shows you got left?
We have two more shows. As this goes out this week, this Thursday night, we're going to be in Dublin. And then the following Thursday, we are going to be in Salford and Salford Keys. So that is the end of it.
Right. Question. When you head to Dublin.
Yes.
Are you going to be trying to crack out your Irish accent or for your own safety, are you going
to
zip
What would be worse? Would it be worse for me to crack out my don't listen or to refer to it as dubbers when I speak to people who live there?
I kind of think your accent, I mean, what I've said is hateful too, but I still think, the accent maybe.
Yeah, especially if the only thing I can say in that accent is just Donald Gleeson. I just look like a madman running down the street shouting an actor's name.
I mean, there is that.
Yeah, we will see what happens. But yes, we're playing Dublin and I'm quite looking forward to it. I've not been to Dublin in a while and I'm quite pleased to be going back there. So pretty psyched.
Oh, well. You'll get a warm welcome.
Well, either that or, you know, not. We'll see. We will see what happens. What other news have we had this week? There was one thing I very much wanted to talk about, and that is that The Bear will air, specifically, it will air seasons 3 and 4 because they've ordered a fourth season, which will be shooting back to back with season 3. So we're getting much more Bear on the air.
Yeah. That is exciting, yeah. And the Variety said it was like they're secretly filming. The next series 4 after they finish season 3.
They issued a press release, it's not a secret.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I'm saying, yeah. It's kind of not really a secret, yeah.
Why are they doing that? Just because of availability? Is it like slow horses when they just get them all in the bag?
Part of it's a cost issue, right? Like, imagine like if they're doing it back-to-back, it's going to be cheaper than sort of doing two separate productions for the two seasons. There might be sort of like, there might be very specific location reasons why they're doing it, or maybe it's just like, let's churn this shit out. It's massively popular.
Yeah, I think when a show's that good and they're absolutely, and obviously now the show's become kind of like one of the most acclaimed shows of you know, the last couple of years, and they know they're going to need more of the show. Why not, you know, commission two more series at the same time? They did it with Blue Lights, the BBC police drama, second series coming soon, and they've already commissioned series 3 and 4 of that because it was so highly acclaimed and such a word of mouth hit. I think it shows, you know, great intelligence on the part of the commissioners that they like, if they've got something that good, you commission more episodes of it. So that's my feeling on the matter.
Good. More Bear is definitely a good thing. You know what else is a good thing? You remember Snowpiercer, which aired over here on Netflix, which was TNT in the US. Now, if memory serves, the fourth season of that was, I think, shot, wasn't it? But just never aired because they cancelled it. And so then we never got it, to the best of my knowledge. I don't know this for 100% fact, but I'm pretty certain we never got it on Netflix either. But it now has a home. It's going to AMC in the US. Again, I don't know quite what happens with it here, but it goes to AMC in the US. So Snowpiercer, the Snowpiercer will ride again.
Yeah, that is good news for Snow. Did you watch?
I did not watch to the end of season 3. The whole of season 1. I watched the whole of season 2. I started season 3 and I apologise to the Snowpiercer fans out there. I thought it had got a bit bad, so I stopped watching it. But I always think it's a shame when a show that has a following just kind of doesn't get aired. And especially if they've actually made the series, which I'm fairly certain is a fact I'm not just making up. You have recollection of this, don't you, Boydie?
Yeah, I'm just looking up now. Yeah, right. I do have recollection of that.
Looking this up, it does appear season 4 was finished and ready to broadcast, but it was decided it would not air on TNT. So it didn't air on TNT, and I'm relatively certain it didn't air on Netflix over here as well. So, but I'm going to look that up as well, because I'm that kind of professional, and I feel the need to be accurate at this stuff. So I'm going to fire up my Netflix app right now live, and I can exclusively reveal via my Netflix app that season 4 is not on Netflix UK either. So no, it never aired anywhere at all ever, and is now going to AMC. So Snowpiercers, you will get a chance to see the final season of this, should you wish to, which you may not. Any other news, Boydie?
There is another, weirdly, there's another Netflix announcement that they didn't mention at the Netflix event yesterday.
What's that?
This series called, yeah, Black Rabbit, starring with Jason Bateman and Jude Law.
How strange.
I know.
What, was it in the press pack they sent?
No, it's just, I was just reading about it on Variety this morning.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's got really good. And Chope Derisu's in it as well, from Gangs of London. It's about the owner of a New York City hotspot, played by Jude Law, follows his turbulent brother, Jason Bateman, allows his turbulent brother back in his life, and he opens the door to escalating dangers that threaten to bring down everything he's built. So yeah, that's another Netflix show in addition to all the Netflix shows and films were announced.
Well, that's not the only one, though, Boydie, because they also didn't talk about Untamed, which is the Eric Banner series. It's a mini-series that's going to be on Netflix, which he's now attached to. And he portrays the role of Eric Inman, and he's, and I quote, a special agent for the National Park Service who works to enforce human law in nature's vast wilderness. So correct me if I'm wrong, but this strikes me as a live-action reimagining of Yogi Bear, but from the point of view of the park ranger. So presumably he just runs around safeguarding picnic baskets from Yogi Bear and Boo Boo. I want to see this. Yeah. I can't imagine why they didn't feature this as part of the showcase.
Yeah, that's crazy. That is crazy. I mean, they did go through a lot to be fair to them, didn't they?
They did.
I wanted to mention the Oscars, which actually I should have mentioned this in the What We've Been
Watching. While
we're
doing film news, carry on. Oh, no, you're right. It's on TV. Yeah. It's on TV. Loophole.
It's on TV.
I'm so excited we're doing Scoop, though.
And here's the news. And here's this is why it's in news. It is the ratings went up. They went up.
Oh, it's TV news.
Yes, this is the TV news. Oscar ratings went up only by 5%. But I know that doesn't sound much. But in this is times when ratings generally go down and down and down and down and down. Until they plateau, you know, a kind of fairly decent point. So it did well, basically. But, and I think, obviously, go on.
Yeah, I would say, I'm not sure how meaningful that is, given that it's on ITV, so you didn't need to pay to watch it, which is kind of big barrier to entry.
The American ratings in America.
I see. Because also over here, two things you had for it, where it was much earlier than it is normally, and it was on ITV. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, more people watched it in the States. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So after recent years, when it goes down and down, it went up again. And of course, that is mainly due to the Oppenheimer Barbie thing. I think the ratings are good for the show generally in America when there are films that people have actually seen rather than, you know, kind of some art house thing that people like us. Well, I've got that. That sounds very pompous and ridiculous. But the ratings are up. And I wanted to say that it was a brilliant show. It was one of the best Oscar shows for years and years and years. It had, you know, I thought the host was great. I thought they really made sure, they really worked really hard to make sure, like, even, you know, the technical categories were interesting. So you had Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger coming on together, you know, Michael Keaton in the audience responding to them. They had a funny bit with Steven Spielberg. They had John Cena naked, you know, genuinely, absolutely naked, holding the Oscars envelope in front of his penis. And then, you know, kind of a whole brilliantly daring bit
about
that.
9:49, Boyd, in the morning.
Yes, you're deploying the word penis far too early for Gary.
Sometimes it just has to be deployed.
There's your quote. Sometimes the penis has to be deployed.
Yeah, and Jimmy Kimmel, right towards the end, there was a really funny bit where Jimmy Kimmel read out a message that Donald Trump had written on his, you know, whatever his social media thing is, about his, like, saying the Oscars were shit and that Jimmy Kimmel was a woke comedian. And he read it out. And when he was reading it out, it was so stupid. This litany of complaints about the Oscars from Donald Trump. I thought generally everyone thought it was a piss take. Everyone thought it was a joke. Oh, so he's making fun of the fact that that Donald Trump does get embroiled in pop culture stuff like this. But no, he genuinely did. Donald Trump write a quite lengthy screed attacking the Oscars while it was on air. So it was,
did he end his tweet with sad or bad?
Something like that. Yeah, he did. Yeah. MAGA, sad, bad, whatever. Yeah. So it was really, really good. There was another podcast, I mentioned this before, there's a pop culture podcast that whereby one of the people on it, who run it every week, talked about how there were no viral moments on this year's Oscars. So I was like, well, you're watching the same show.
I'm just no Ken.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I haven't even mentioned that. Amazing performance of I'm Just Ken, yeah, which was absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, I mean, it was, there were loads of great viral moments. It worked really well. And, yeah, they've got to keep that up next year. There you go. My Oscars.
No,
analysis.
Well done, Boyd. You pulled it back from just being the Netflix segment this week, so that's good.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okie dokie. Yes. Well, that was it for this week's news. Let's move on now to the reviews. And there can only be one place to start. And it is, of course, Three Body Problem, the long awaited Netflix adaptation of Cixin Liu's novel of the same name, only with the indefinite article carved off the front. This comes to us from via the Game of Thrones showrunner. It's actually David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, as well as Alexander Wu. And I'm going to be a little bit cagier about the plot on this one than either the Netflix synopsis or the official Empire review, both of which I think give too much away. So all I'm going to say is that, so this is about this group of 5 20-somethings, and they all studied physics together at Oxford, and they get tied up in like a mystery that involves the mysterious suicides of scientists. It also involves some unexplained phenomena. And frankly, what appears to be the rules of physics suddenly not working anymore. So what better way to address a three-body problem than to make it a one-boidy problem?
Ah.
Yes.
Yes.
Casey's excited. Relieved. I didn't turn to her.
Yeah. Relieved.
She did a little dance then. She was gesticulating. Yes. As I was doing that, listeners, she was gesticulating wildly, like, no, don't ask me. No.
Well, it's a relief that you said no spoilers, because then it makes it even, like, it's better to explain, because it's quite a tricky one, right?
It is tricky, yeah.
To not spoil and also to explain. So I'm relieved. But Boyd, take away.
There's a principal plot point, I think, which has been front loaded as part of the synopsis, but is not revealed until a few episodes in. And I had a bit of a back and forth with John Nugent, who reviewed it for us on Empire, because I wasn't entirely thrilled with it being in our official synopsis in the magazine, but it was too late, we'd gone to press. So I'm deciding to leave that out here.
Are you outing Nuge?
Yes, I'm outing the Nuge. To be fair, he said to him,
you're throwing poor Nuge under the bus.
Well, no, we talked about it. He said, well, you know, we did mention it in the feature. And I said, you know what, that's actually a good point. Like, it's covered quite heavily in the feature that we wrote in the magazine. But if you haven't read the feature and you haven't read the Empire review, then we're not going to spoil it here. Boydie, take it away.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the fact that this involves a kind of, I'm trying to work around it. This involves.
I thought you were going to say it.
No, I'm not. No, but it's interesting because I was thinking about, I wonder how much I can say about that thing. But what I'd say about that is that you know it's coming. Quite early on.
Here's the thing,
I think.
I didn't know it was coming.
Really?
So I own all three of the books, but I haven't read them because I've never got around to it. And because I've been put off reading them. And we're going to get into this. So we're going to do a Three Body Problem spoiler special, which I'm hoping we can record next week, Boydie, just so you know. So these books are written by Cixin Liu, and he's a Chinese sort of, he's an engineer, like he's a scientist. And so the books are very clinical, very hard sci-fi in that they are concerned with the hard sciences. They're very physics-based. They're very factually accurate. They're quite complex, quite dense, and they are, in the same way that Foundation, the Asimov book is, they're very cold, and they're very ideas-based and not character-based. So that's quite a difficult point of entry for people. But what I want to say is kind of what I alluded to on the podcast last week when I climbed down from my hard sci-fi position. Technically, it is still hard sci-fi because it's around physics. But what I'm saying is, I think what they did here, clearly what Benioff and Weiss and Wu sat down and said, they said, right, how can we take this brilliant idea but make it work on TV in a very accessible, character-led way? And I think that's how they approached this.
Jump in and just say, it is accessible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, very much so.
But I was
I made this point.
I was sent these, spoiler alert, okay. I was sent these, I went to a screening of the first two episodes quite a long time ago, and to which James wasn't invited. And
rise to the bait.
It was apparent very early on that I think Netflix wanted to emphasize to non hard sci-fi
people who aren't
nerds,
me.
Like James, people who aren't James and his cohort, that it is accessible for normal people.
The normies will love James, it.
Yeah. And it absolutely 100% is, because it is character driven.
Yeah.
So they very, like, you know, this is an object lesson into how to take what sounds like, obviously I haven't gone anywhere near the original stuff. Are they just novels or graphic novels?
No, novels. They're three novels. It's a trilogy.
I haven't gone even. It's really accessible. It's absolutely. And it's partly the way that, and the thing, but the thing that we're not talking about, the fundamental underlying thing that it's kind of about, right, that I'm avoiding brilliantly. I think it's very clear that that's an element of it from early on, just from what happens following certain characters, where they go, what they end up doing, what the jobs they get, what the fuck would you think this person's doing apart from the thing that we're not talking about anyway. Do you know what I mean? So I don't
look at Kate's face. She's like, what the I know. Fuck are you talking about?
Anyway, yeah. Anyway, just to get to the crux of it, this series begins with a very powerful scene set during the Chinese Cultural Revolution, where a young Chinese astrophysicist sees her father brutally killed in a kind of act of Mao Zedong-driven Chinese fascistic activity, trying to destroy people talking about stuff in public that doesn't go along with the ideas of Mao. And that's a really powerful start. And it's then about this young woman watching that happen and what happens to her. We follow what happens to her. It cuts between the past and the present. Then in the present, these scientists around the world are kind of having their projects and things they're investigating seem to kind of be affected by some weird external force of some kind. There's this core group of people who kind of know each other from Oxford, who are scientists or people who work with scientists, and they're having various different kind of like life experiences now. In fact, for example, John Bradley's character is this kind of quasi obnoxious, very wealthy entrepreneur, and how his character and how his kind of friends deal with what's going on in the world is, again, makes us tap into and makes it very accessible, because those characters are interesting within themselves. And you get Benedict Wong's character, who's kind of like some mysterious person investigating these phenomena. And of course, Benedict Wong is just brilliant generally. I mean, he's always fantastically kind of soulful, open. There's something very open about him, like, I don't know, draws you in. Literally. So what better person to draw
and
you
he,
in?
And he gets to use his story. Own Mancunian accent as well, which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great. His own Mancunian accent. And his boss is played by Liam Cunningham. That's like from Game of Thrones. Anyway, bottom line is, it's really interesting. It's got lots of different kind of things going on at the same time. There's a whole, did you mention the whole kind of virtual computer game thing?
No, I didn't. So thing that, going on? That is a con- that yeah. is a part of it, that a mysterious VR headset is found in the, shall we say, the apartment of someone who has killed themselves. And so they start delving into this weird virtual game. So we'll get to Ready Player One there. And there's other stuff. There are hallucinations
that's the
as well.
That was a little bit going to tap out. There were certain moments. And
yeah, well, I was going to talk
that
about
was one
that.
Of them.
I was going to talk about that. Mm. So I really enjoyed it. I think I did get slightly wary of these quite extended, quite spectacular visually kind of reenactments of what's going on in this virtual VR gaming helmet thing going on. Because, and in fact, it's one of those things where when you see the trailer of this show, there's like, oh my God, it's spectacular, weird, freaky things happening, intercut with like more down-to-earth things, people, humans on Earth doing stuff that's, you know, more identifiable. And of course, most of the really demented is within the virtual, the VR game. Mm. I hope that's not giving too much
away.
No,
that's fine.
And that's fine, but it does. I always think with those kinds of things, you care slightly less about what's going on because you know it is within a virtual gaming thing. But then, so that's what I'd say. I was slightly wary of that element of it in the first two episodes. Then I watched episode three, and in episode three, some League of Gentlemen pop up,
the cameos are wild.
The cameos are wild. Reese Shearsmith. Mark Gatiss and Reese Shearsmith pop up in episode three. And that scene.
As what? As who?
Well, I'm not going to
say. No. There are quite a few. They're not the only ones either.
But they're in this virtual world. And I thought that stuff that they were doing was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and just in terms of epic scope, right? To dramatize and visualize the ideas that they do in that bit of episode three, I thought was absolutely brilliant. Like, so it really got won me around to the world within that VR headset thing that I was slightly doubtful about after watching the first two episodes. So I'm fully in. I've watched up to episode four. I will absolutely plow through the rest as soon as I've got enough time. I'm in time for this spoiler special that we're recording next week, apparently. So, I think they've done a great job in making it fascinating and accessible and all of that.
It's good that you can fit in four episodes around this, around your busy Love Rat schedule. So I'm pleased really you managed is. To do that.
Yeah. Priorities. Yeah,
I've seen all eight of these. It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. And I'm no longer, I think I mentioned this last week, I'm no longer as worried that this is going to get cancelled. Because I think it is accessible. I think the central mystery is really compelling, regardless of whether you like science fiction or not. The VR stuff is not the main thrust of this show. It's just a small part of it. And it's very character-led. Like, again, the books are very, very different. I've obviously now got into those, but they're very sort of like central about these sort of one Chinese character, and then there's another one here. What they've done here is they've taken a group of five friends from Oxford, the Oxford Five, and they've made you really care about these characters, and they have centered the story around them. So they're all essentially fabricated for the show. But, you know, Aza Gonzalez, who plays Augie Salazar, she's having sort of these visual hallucinations, and you're like, why? And they're a phenomenon that you can't explain. They've got their friend, Will, played by Alex Sharp, who we won't go too much into his plot for the sake of spoilers, but I would say John Bradley, owner of Jack's Snacks, which is genuinely brilliant. Joe Venadepo, who plays Saul, who works for one of the people who sort of killed himself very early on, so he gets dragged in. And then, of course, the kind of, I guess if there's a main character to this, and it is an ensemble, but I guess if there is a main character, it's Jess Hong's character, Jin Cheng, and she is essentially one of the sort of great sort of physicist minds of her generation. But it looks stunning, and I was, you know, I thought this will be one that I'll love and Kay will absolutely hate, and then when I saw it I was like, do you know what, I don't think she'll hate it.
Yeah, and you're right, I didn't hate it at all, and I think it's exactly what you said. It's because it's character driven that I thought I really invested in those five, very intrigued about these, you know, these scientists around the world that are seemingly taking their own lives but, you know, aren't. And I've been drawn in. But the VAR stuff, no, VR.
VAR. I love a VAR.
I'd love it, yeah. Yeah. Episode four, there's a VAR football match decision, which is very controversial.
Doesn't this show that I spend too much time with you talking about your matches you've been at the weekend? The VR stuff. I mean, at that point, I was like, no, please no. I don't think it doesn't need it. For me, it didn't need, I don't know, like, it might be integral to the story because I only watched one episode, but it was a bit much for me, but overall, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a lot to love here, and I think there's a great, I say it gets richer and more interesting as you go on, and they've pulled forward elements from the other two books as well to kind of make this series really well structured. But yeah, eight episodes long, I've seen all of them, and I do very much recommend it. And I know some people might be thinking, oh, I don't think I want to get into this because it's Netflix, they're going to end up cancelling it. I don't think they necessarily will. I think it will do a lot better than people think, but also I mentioned this in Pilot Plus last week, I believe there are people up on high on Netflix who are very invested in this project from what I've heard, who are, you know, it's been,
there. Your secret sources.
You've been chatting to Ted Sarandos again.
That's it. I called Ted. I said, Ted, let's talk three body problem. He was like, oh, mate, it's brilliant, isn't it? That's how he talks, Ted. Oh, mate, oh, it's great. Loved it. Loved it, mate. Geez. Anyway, three body problem then, which is on the Netflix on what day, Boydie?
March 21st, 2024. Is that Thursday or Friday? I think it's Thursday.
Feels like a Thursday. Yeah. But that is all Thursday. Eight episodes. So block out Thursday night, binge through it. You will not regret it. Next up, we have Palm Royale on Apple TV Plus, and this is a period comedy by Abe Sylvia based on the 2018 novel Mr. and Mrs. American Pie by Juliette McDaniel. And this basically, that's a pretty bloody good cast, quite frankly. It's got Laura Dern in it. It's got Kristen Wiig in it. Alison Janney. Ricky Martin living his absolute best Vida Loca. Kristen Wiig here plays this woman who's sort of desperate to break into, high society in Palm Beach, and specifically this exclusive members club called the Palm Royale. And speaking of Machiavellian social climbers, who better to talk about this than Kay?
Yes. So as you say, this is about the character called Maxine, played by Kristen Wiig, who I have to say is brilliant in this role, because the character is someone who is, you know, she's sweet and personable, and she's super aspirational. She's trying to break into this very close circle of socialite, like very wealthy women who frequent the Palm Royale. And, you know, you kind of, on one hand, you kind of see where she's coming from and like don't don't begrudge her, but then she does some really underhand stuff along the line to try and inveigle her way into their inner circle. And so, but I think Kristen Wiig, because of her like performance, does a great job of making her quite a sympathetic character. And you actually will her along, even though she is doing some stuff where you're like, morally, I'm not sure if I agree with this. The whole thing is just, so we've kind of said this before, but you know, it's got such a beautiful look and feel to it. It's set in the 70s in Palm Beach. And just like the costumes to the decor to like everything about it just feels very elevated. Alison Janney is amazing in this as the Queen Bee. She plays Evelyn, who is very much the leader of the gang of women that Kristen Wiig's character Maxine is trying to infiltrate, and she absolutely wants nothing to do. She rules the roost and won't let anyone new in. And so we see all the different ways that Maxine tries to break in. Literally, she breaks into the Palm Royale, and Ricky Martin, as you mentioned, is having his, you know, living his best life as an awful waiter who absolutely relishes kicking her out, basically, physically. And yeah. I enjoyed this. I really, really liked it. I thought it was great. I thought it just really exposed that kind of mean girl attitude of these very wealthy women who just won't want nothing to do with it because she is not as rich as them, isn't as well connected, even though she tries to spin a few yarns here and there, but is quickly discovered as being a liar.
So this has gotten the most incredible cast, right? Kristen Wiig, as you said, Laura Dern, Alison Janney, Leslie Bibb, Ricky Martin, Carol Burnett is in it. Yeah,
Josh Lucas.
Looks incredible, as you say. The wig budget alone must have been like probably like, you could probably pay for an entire series of like various.
And he means the actual wig, not just Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, very good. Wig's wig is extraordinary. Alison Janney, the costumes, the dresses, like these incredibly lavish, like mostly floral, elaborate, and there's the evening wear, the whole thing, and the production design, and the attention to detail, and the sunny, the cinematography, which is like vibrant, sunny, etc. It's all there. I did not get on with it though. I couldn't. Yeah,
no.
I found the tone slightly irritating and arch. It's got this voiceover from Kristen Wiig's character, this southern. We know it's not Kristen Wiig's normal accent. Anyway, I didn't really understand the point of her accent. And slightly over the top, kind of like arch, as I say, voiceover that's fairly incessant. There's a lot of it. And kind of telling you what's going on. I didn't think it needed that much of that. And I thought that, and really, it's like it's a show about social climbing and class, but both of feminism is going on at the time. So Laura Dern's in this group of kind of feminists who are exploring, you know, other sides of women's lives. And all that's interesting. There's like, you know, deals with abortion and et cetera. But it's just the tone. I just didn't, I think it's one of those things where, Tony, where you either go with it or you don't. And I just, I couldn't get along with it. I just thought it was a bit, felt contrived and it didn't need to be there. And you know what? I even did, because I was so interested in it tonally and why it slightly annoyed me. I kind of looked up the novel that it was based on. I wonder whether, you know, is the novel the same? And you can actually read the opening chapters online, like of this book. And the tone of the novel is much less arch and contrived than the show, for some weird reason.
It's heightened for the show?
Yes, they seem to have decided we're going to do this heightened thing, yeah, and everything's going to be slightly camp, over the top. You know, the scenes where they go to the like equivalent of where it is, I don't know, Bergdorf Goodman or whatever, to try on their dresses with the very camp guy who sorts them all out, you know. Like those scenes, they were kind of fun, but equally, you know, I don't know, slightly a camp for the sake of it kind of thing.
I feel disappointed
I'm disappointed I didn't enjoy it more, I have to say.
I enjoyed this, but I'm disappointed you didn't get more on board in this, considering that you spent like all that time waxing lyrical about Love Rat.
Well, I mean, that's very,
is,
I mean, Kate,
I think we can all agree this is no Love Rat.
It's no Love Rat, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm disappointed you've adopted that slightly snobbish, you know.
This is not about the channel it's on. It's just about.
Yeah, I mean, he expects that behaviour from me, Kay, but from you, it's very disappointing.
Exactly. Do you know what? Here's the thing. I think this is what crystallised it for me. I think it's trying to be funny, right, about this stuff, and it's not funny. So what's the point of the kind of very arch tone? I've used that word a lot, but that is the word for it. If it's not going to be funny either, well, it's like, just do it.
This
just
is the question that I was going to ask you. Is it trying to be funny? Because I, for the life of me, could not work it out. Because
I don't think it's trying to be
that funny. This is the thing.
Funny.
I'm not sure it is, which is why the tone makes no sense to me whatsoever. I'm 100% in Boyd's camp on
Thank
this.
Thank you.
Like, the tone is a wild choice here. Like, Abe Sylvia has gone for this very heightened, almost parodic. And Kristen Wiig, yes, who's a very talented comedic actor, but she can do drama, but she plays this in comedy mode, but without the jokes. So you've got the heightened feeling where it's just a little bit arch, a little bit odd, but it isn't funny. And I was like, so why are you doing it? And did they think that the drama wouldn't drag people in? Would it not be compelling? Are they trying to make it more engaging? Because for me, it had the opposite effect. I think if they'd gone full dramatic, I might have been involved in the characters and the situations. But as it was, the tone just made the whole thing inaccessible to me. I was like, I can't get on board with this because it's
But
daft.
maybe they added some levity to the tone to make it less tragic.
Possibly. Possibly that might have been the intent. I just couldn't get on with it. I found it because I thought the actual plot of it for the first episode, let's bear in mind, because there's a little sort of like, there's a like, almost like a little sizzle at the end showing you what's come up. It feels like it gets more involved. But the idea of she's a social climber, she wants to get into a club. So what does she do? She, under false pretenses, befriends one of the members and tries to sort of inveigle. That is a hoary tale as old as time. It's been told so many thousands of times, many, many times better than this by great writers. And I just thought, why do I care about this incredibly cliched setup? Now, to be fair, as I said, it may go to more interesting places. But from the initial setup, you've got a plot that isn't inventive or new or particularly well executed. You've got a tone that sets you up for jokes that never come. And the whole thing just honestly just bored me to death. I really, really couldn't get into it.
God, you two have really made me... Yeah, I 100% agree with James.
That never happens.
Now you've made... Do you know what's really awful? Even more awful still is that you're making me have a rethink about it now.
But you said it very well. What is the point of that tone? Yeah, for this story. And particularly fast, I urge... Have check it out. Check out the opening chapter online. It's weird. The book's fine.
Yeah.
The book's absolutely fine. It's like they've seen other shows similar to this, similar subject matter, as you say. And they go, oh yeah, that's the way to do it. Like a bit like, you know what it reminded me of the Ryan Murphy shows, mm-hmm, right? But Ryan Murphy
yes.
has, but sometimes it doesn't work with Ryan Murphy shows as well. But other times it does and it fits the subject matter. This seemed just too contrived and too...
I would still say good performances and great look and feel, though.
Yeah, incredible cast. And honestly, I'd be interested to hear what people think. So by all means, if you are listening to the podcast and you have the time and you have an Apple TV subscription, watch the first episode. Let us know what you think. I'm fascinated to hear if people find this, you know, more accessible. It's a weird one. I was disappointed, it has to be said. Though I have to say the 69 wardrobes were spot on.
Oh
yeah, costume yeah. design oh, knocked yeah. out the park.
It looked everything all tech exactly correct. all the craft yeah. all the craft is there, but I mean, to what purpose?
Yeah,
and this cast, I mean, oh,
so good.
Sorry.
Okay, yeah. Let's move on.
We've broken K.
No, because also now I'm like, yeah, I do see what you mean, which is frustrating for me, as you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, this comes to Apple TV Plus when, Boydie?
March 20. I think it's a Wednesday.
Feels like a Wednesday.
Wednesday, March
feels
20.
Feels like a Wednesday.
2024, the year of our Lord.
There we go. Massively passive-aggressive listing from Boydie.
Yeah.
No, our readers have been very thankful that you've... thankful that you've taken the time to actually say the dates and times.
Yeah, very yeah. important.
Yeah.
Right. Finally this week, we've got Twisted Metal, in which Anthony Mackie, well, he talked about it a fair bit last week on this very podcast, but this is based on the PlayStation 1 game from back in the day, and this sees Mackie as a milkman, which in this case is a post-apocalyptic courier, and he in this undertakes a daring mission for Neve Campbell to retrieve an unknown package from New Chicago on one side of this sort of devastated America and bring it back across the ravaged US to New San Francisco. What could possibly go wrong? Oh, God. Boydie, is this Twisted or Metal?
Well, I was really looking forward to Palm Royale. That looked great from the trailer, the cast, etc. I was really looking forward to that. Severely disappointed, in fact, irritated by it.
Okay,
this one, I was like, oh my God, this is a total James takeover. What the fuck is this show? It's based on a computer game. It's got like Marvel people in it. It's like you know, cut. It's just, it looked basic and annoying and irritating. I was like, why are we reviewing this when we should probably be reviewing another Channel 5 thriller that stripped across the week, starring Jason Watkins?
Coma.
Yeah, Coma, exactly. Exactly. There literally was one we could have reviewed. But, I ended up really enjoying it. It is idiotic. And, like, you know, he is kind of quasi obnoxious, but quite funny. The show itself, it reminded me of, do you remember Blood Drive, which was this like post-apocalyptic thing about racing, car racing, where the cars were fueled by blood, literal human blood. Yeah.
I remember that.
Oh, God. Yeah. It was on like, I think it was on Sci-Fi here. Or something. I don't even know if that channel even exists anymore, the equivalent of what is now Sky Sci-Fi. I mean, it was basic, but it was like literally just an excuse to have like car chases, violence, gratuitous nudity, etc. And this is a bit like that, but not quite as gratuitous. So far, I only watched the first episode. Not so far that much gratuitous nudity. But it's got a fun tone to it. And I think Anthony Mackie's having the time of his life. I mean, he's loving it. There's a really funny kind of like little twisty bit involving Neve Campbell's character and what she's trying to get him to do that was quite nice, smart and clever. It's for a kind of like trash fest. It's kind of trashy, deliberately trashy. I mean, you can tell from the posters, like, you know, if you look online at the Twisted Metal poster, it sums up the tone. It's like ridiculous. And it's also a bit like Death Race 2000, all of that whole kind of like racing stupidity, cars, kind of Fury Road, even, you know, Mad Max Fury Road. There's a bit of that in it visually. And like they use Champagne Supernova by Oasis. They deploy that quite cleverly. And it was reminded me of the fact that in The Weakest Link last week on TV, they had a question about what was the first word of the Oasis song Supernova? Was it champagne or lemonade? And someone gets lemonade. And lemonade Supernova. Can you imagine? Anyway, that was really funny. And there's a whole bit about where he's kind of stripped naked. There's a scene where he's stripped naked, Anthony Mackie, and I thought it was really funny.
Why are you laughing?
And they put perfume up his ass. And I was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is different. So
I don't know what's happening now. I actually don't know.
Well, like, you're going to have to deal with the fact.
This is mad.
You're going to have to deal with the fact that I enjoyed it. It's fun. It's stupid. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird to have these A-listers kind of involved in what is really a kind of trashy thing. So I thought that was interesting as well. So I thought it was fun.
Okay. Give us the verdict.
Okay. Listen, I don't want to go.
Do it, Kay. Come on.
But this is, so, you know, you guys were saying about Palm Royale, like, what is the tone? It's not funny. Is it trying to be funny? For me, I think a bigger crime is when something tries to be funny and isn't. And this is where this hits for me, right? And I feel really bad because obviously we've got Anthony Mackie on. I feel bad because, you know, he's a great guy and he gives a good performance in this. But my point, the overriding thing is, it's trying to be fun and frothy and like, and, you know, I'm loath to use James's word silly, but it just never hits the right note for me and it's never funny. So, for example, there's a couple of examples I wrote down. So, like, in the beginning, you know, it's very loud and car crashes and guns and everything and forced jokes because they do feel forced. And in one instance, he is involved in a car chase and John Doe, he plays John Doe, spots a footlocker. And, you know, it's like this gag of like, oh, yeah, oh, wow, I'm in the middle of this car chase. And, oh, look, there's a footlocker. Maybe I should stop by. And it's like, really?
Yeah,
really?
I liked it. I thought it was fun. Funny. Yeah.
Oh, Boyd's inner sneaker head was served well there.
Yeah.
What did you get, Boyd? Fine. What were the trainers? Come on, tell me. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, he grabs one trainer, doesn't he?
Well, no, yeah. He grabs one, but weirdly then is wearing both of them. I don't know how he got the other
exactly.
one.
I mean, I mean, that's just one of the many mysteries about this. And so, yeah, he's John Doe. He's meant to be this really fun, quirky guy, but he just falls short. He didn't, you know, the dialogue doesn't deliver and it's actually quite cheesy. I mean, there's also another moment. Well, I've actually written down the moment where he's stripped and doused and has perfume sprayed up his ass as an example of it not being funny, but obviously really rocked Boyd's boat. But yeah, and then later on, and then he later makes this lame gag.
Sorry.
And then later makes this lame gag about 2-ply, 3-ply toilet roll, which is considered to be worth, you know, making Neve Campbell laugh, who can't even muster a smile. So
she has big kill my agent energy all the way through this show, it has to be said.
James, do you
fickle,
agree?
Promiscuous co-host that I am, I'm going to be Team K on this one. Yes, I'm with you on this. I didn't think this was good at all. And for the same reason, so I thought, look, Anthony Mackie, really charismatic. And I think he sells it. He gives it his absolute all and he absolutely does his best to sell it. Mm-hmm. I just don't think the script is there. I don't think the gags are particularly well written. And this is the game, I believe, came out in 1995. I think that's either when this is set or it's when society crumbled. So like society froze in 1995. So it's all 90s sort of like music aesthetics and whatnot. It's all very, you know, set in like a post-apocalyptic 90s. And I quite like that. But you know, you got Sweet Tooth, the killer clown who turns up at the end of the first episode. Again, is a character from the game. I thought the story was quite weak early on. You get a very sort of like slight setup of the fact that he's going to be paired with Stephanie Beatriz's character, whose name is just Quiet. Her brother Loud is also in this. I tried really hard because this is a very me thing to like, and I really wanted to like it. I really like Anthony Mackie, but I was a bit bored. Thomas Hayden Church turns up as this like evil sheriff. I was like, what is this?
Oh yeah, he was quite funny.
It feels like a video game. Like it feels like, you know, like video game level, you know, and of that era, just like a little bit too thin for me.
Yeah. And not enough work has been done on the story, like the story.
Yeah,
right?
And I don't think you need like a super deep story as long as like you can give it some life in the screen, like really punch up the dialogue, make it really funny. And like I say, I think Anthony Mackie's performance is on point, but I do think he's working with quite sort of like mid-level sort of like C-grade jokes. And I think he does his absolute best to amp them up. And sometimes I think that makes it worse.
Well,
it's a bit like when he turns up at the gates of somewhere and he's like having bants with the security guards there. And I was just, oh, this is a bit cringe. This is a bit cringe. So I was really crestfallen. I will say that Amon, who interviewed Anthony Mackie, he liked this a lot more than I did. And Boydie, obviously, you know, a big old Twisted Metal fan. Oh. So there are, I think, 10 episodes of this. So for the next week's podcast, Boyd will watch the next 9 episodes of Twisted Metal and report back.
No. I thought it was fine. Don't get me wrong. It's not like genius. Obviously, it's shoddy.
Is your favourite show ever of the year? That's what I heard. Yeah.
I mean, nice try, Kate. No, I didn't. And it's fine. It's fun. It's fun, stupid, you know, throwaway bullshit fun. That's what it is. Yeah, it almost doesn't need a particularly good script.
Take that quote for your poster.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm just saying. I was surprised. I wasn't expecting you to enjoy it at all, and I just enjoyed it. I thought it was perfectly fine.
We should mention this also. Unusually half-hour episodes. Which I think is, I think my biggest takeaway from this is, if you were going to tell this story, given that the story is, and let's be honest, regardless of the story, is not what I would say mega complex, I feel like this could have been a film. Does this need to be like a 10-part show? Does it? I don't think it does. I think like a tight 2-hour film, this could have been a lot of fun. I just don't know that it needs to be a show myself. Anyway, Twisted Metal, Paramount Plus, when, Boydie?
Still more preferable to watch than Palm Springs.
What?
I'm with Boydie on that. I would pick this over.
I'd rather.
Yes.
I would pick this over Palm Royale.
I'd rather watch Palm Royale.
Just checking. I'll just check it. Anyway.
Well, that's good. You two can have a view invite your boys and I'll stay at home and watch mine.
Listeners, you will want to watch all 10 episodes of Twisted Metal when they arrive on Paramount Plus, Thursday, the 21st of March, 2024.
Yes, indeed. Well, what else is out this week, Boydie? Apart from X-Men 97, which is a return to the classic 90s, while we're talking about the mid-90s, the classic 90s X-Men animated cartoon, which I used to watch at university and used to really, really enjoy. That lands on Disney Plus on Wednesday the 20th, and I think we're going to watch that and review it for Pilot Plus. We'll be talking about that on Thursday, very excitingly.
One for us to look forward to.
What else have we got this week?
There is the aforementioned Channel 5 drama Coma, stripped across the week, Monday to Thursday, with Jason Watkins, who's always very good, a byword for quality, one might say.
We should have done that.
We'll see. Potentially. There is Beyond Paradise. Kay likes that show. Back on Friday, BBC One, 8 o'clock. That's the kind of spin-off from Death in Paradise, isn't it, Kay?
Yeah, it's like Would you call it Cozy Crime? It's a spin-off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cozy Crime. The FBI franchise is back, season 6 on Sky Witness on Thursday. If you like that kind of thing. What else? Anything else? Oh, there's a thing called Helgoland 513 on Sky Atlantic on Friday, which is a futuristic drama series from the guy who created The Time Traveler's Wife, Robert Schwentke, the adaptation of The Time Traveler's Wife. It's set in 2036, when Germany's only deep-sea island has become humanity's last safe haven after apocalypse wreaks havoc. Sounds quite James.
I do like a havoc-wreaking apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. That's Friday on Sky Atlantic. And now I think that's about it.
What is our pick of the week? Boydie, you are not allowed to choose Love Rat.
I think even though we've all disagreed healthily, I think we can all agree that it's Three
it
Body Problem.
It is indeed. Three Body Problem. 100%. Watch it now. Kay, this is a big week for you. A big sci-fi show is your pick of the week. This is exciting. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Oh.
Even though you are
open-minded. I'm open-minded,
yeah,
see, James.
Yeah, I'm loving it. Fantastic. That's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. If you did like it, do head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever, anywhere else that offers you a star rating and give us a 5-star rating. Kay, you're about to say something.
Yes. Do you know what? I haven't been on in ages, but I looked yesterday and we are getting ever closer to the day that I'm going to buy you a Pat Val cake. I think we're only 200 off.
I'm very excited. If 200 of you can leave us reviews in the next 7 days, I will have cake. Please make this happen.
Yes, I will remortgage my flat and I'll buy James a massive cake.
This must happen. What else am I going to say? Oh, yes, please do follow us on the social medias at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer, and of course at Pilot TV Pod. On next week's show, Ewan McGregor is going to be stopping by to talk about A Gentleman in Moscow. That is very, very exciting. Also, Renegade Nell drops next week, which involves a Derry girl, but is written by Sally Wainwright. So that's very, very exciting as well. I'm sure we'll be reviewing that. And of course, on Pilot Plus, we will be doing X-Men 97. And another show from the vault yet to be revealed, but we've got a few contenders and a few people putting stuff forward. And thank you for those of you who do subscribe to Pilot Plus, which is what allows us to do this podcast. If you do not already subscribe there, please do so, because you get more reviews, you get exciting postbag feedback from us, and of course our retrospective looks at classic shows as well. Until next week, when we hope to get your feedback on Let's Be Honest, Pomerel and Twisted Metal. Why don't you watch them both and tell us what you think? Tell us who's right. Boydie or Kay? I want to know. And of course, make sure you've seen all of Three Body Problem 2. But until then, pilot out.